Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. We welcome you to Talking.Golf. Rob Hernandez here, Gary D'Amato there. It is a beautiful day across the state of Wisconsin. As golf courses continue to open by the half dozens, we're up to over 130 courses. And Gary D'Amato, I can tell you that the original championship course at Black Wolf Run and the Irish course, according to a nice gentleman at the other end of the reservation line at Golf Kohler, said that the weather permitting, the plan is for the those two courses to open April 5th, a rare chance to play the Black Wolf Run layout as it was when it first opened, the back nine of the Meadow Valleys course and nine holes of the River course. And then if Mother Nature cooperates, and so far she's been doing that and then some, April 26th will be when all four courses open for the season. You've got a weather forecast, for at least a weather conditions update, that tells me southeast Wisconsin and the Caledonia headquarters looking a lot like San Diego today.
It sure is, Rob. You know, sunny, breezy, 65. I hit balls today at the range, and no jacket, you know, just a short sleeve shirt, which is highly unusual for March 11th. And Ives Grove, where I hit balls, is open now. There are players out on the course, and the parking lot was full. So all signs are good right now.
And as we look at the extended forecast for this week for the Milwaukee area, Monday and Tuesday, the bellwether, as it were, days of the week with highs in the 60s. Then it cools a little bit, 52 on Wednesday, 44 Thursday and Friday, and then 52 on Saturday, so a decent day Saturday. And then it's kind of typical March weather where we're teetering between, are we going to really launch into spring, or is winter going to rear its ugly head? Chance for precipitation at the back end of the 14-day forecast, where the highs are only 43 and the overnight low is 28. So that could produce the dreaded four-letter S word, that being snow.
Yeah, we, you know, the good thing is if it does snow, it's disappointing, especially when it's been so nice for 5-6 weeks now. But if it does snow, it's going to disappear fast. I know people who have played golf and then they see snow get frustrated. But, yeah, the good thing is the snow doesn't last long. And hopefully we won't have much, you know, from here on out. You know, I'm always dreading that 10-incher on March 25th, but so far so good.
And we were doing a little internal emailing among the four or five of us here at Wisconsin.Golf about the week ahead, and I finally had to come to grips with reality, Gary. 2 weeks from today, we're recording the podcast here on Monday, March 11th. 2 weeks from today, it's the first day of practice for the high school boys golf season, and then 17 days away from the first match they can possibly hold. And again, unless something transpires with that long-range forecast, which kind of runs up against the start of boys golf, it's supposed to be 42 is the high temperature on Monday the 25th in Milwaukee, with a 45% chance of rain and an overnight low of 28. So, but unless something happens, I would expect that, you know, there's no reason why they wouldn't be playing matches right away on that Thursday if they're on the schedule. Sometimes schools have now go on the route of not really bothering to schedule early to save the athletic director the headache of having to reschedule those matches and to kind of backload things. But, boy, this is one year where if you can move stuff up, you might want to do it.
Yeah, how disappointing would it be, Rob, to, you know, have the weather we've had for the last 5 or 6 weeks when, you know, we've basically been playing golf on and off now since early February, you know, with a few days of closures, but mostly we've been out on the course, you know, for 5 or 6 weeks now. How disappointing and frustrating would it be if the end of March brings, you know, really crummy weather and some snow, and then those high school golfers have to deal with that after recreational golfers have had a great, you know, spate of weather here.
Absolutely. I know it would be exceedingly disappointing. The only thing that I think the coaches will probably cling to is the fact that most of their golfers have gotten time in on the golf course at the range here during February and early March, and they're going to be in better shape starting the season, whenever that might be,
than they would most years. And I've heard that across the board from the college coaches that have come here to Arizona. Heard it again over the weekend from Dave Table, the women's golf coach at UW La Crosse. You know, their area just north of there, between Trempealeau Mountain on up to Kilkarney Hills and River Falls, were among the first courses to open back in the early part of February. So a lot of their kids have been on the course, and it was a little bit different coming down here for them to play at the George Fox Invitational over at Westbrook Village the last couple days. But by the same token, at least they were nothing was different as far as seeing their ball in flight and not being like indoors in a gym hitting into a net. I think that's going to be the key, is that you know, that's not going to be their first, you know, these high school teams, their first introduction to golf this season. And that's just a luxury, I think, for the high school coaches to have. So we shall see. It was nice weather down in Tucson yesterday, Gary. I made the drive down to La Paloma Country Club, the new venue for the Coligard Classic. And Jerry Kelly, Steve Stricker were, well, Steve was only three shots off the pace. Jerry, four, entering the final round with Stuart Sink leading the way. And I tell you, nobody's bingo cards yesterday really showed anything that anybody expected. I would have expected Stuart Sink to be, at worst, warding off challenges and not full-out collapsing on the back nine. And I would have thought that Steve Stricker, knowing that this week's Players' Championship appearance is on the horizon, would have continued his crescendo towards that. And instead, he had a miserable front nine. And in the end, Jerry Kelly, the tournament host, rallied. And if not for a couple of really close calls with birdie at 17 and 18, might have birdied all four holes down the stretch to at least force a playoff. And instead, he finishes T2. A great showing by Jerry in and a great week for Coligard over there at the Coligard Classic.
Yeah, it's a very emotional week for Jerry, as both of us wrote about off and on this past week, Rob. You know, he puts his heart and soul into his ambassadorship for Exact Sciences and Coligard. And, you know, this is one rare week when golf is sort of secondary to him. Don't get me wrong, when he steps on the course, he still wants to win, but he's primarily focused, you know, on, you know, I did a Zoom call with him. I know you talked to him, and a lot of reporters talked to him. And the subject that he keeps bringing up is, you know, pre-screening and testing for colorectal cancer. He's been very passionate about that. He's lost a couple friends to that insidious form of cancer. And so the golf is secondary for him, but he still managed a great week. And, boy, you're right about Steve, though. I expected him to come out, you know, blazing in the third round, and if not win, at least, you know, push the leaders, and the opposite happened.
Yeah, and I think, and we'll talk, you know, a little bit about him as we segue into, you know, our talk about what's coming up here this week on the PGA Tour. You know, both of them are looking, you know, to kind of, you know, get in that zone where, the, you know, it seems like one or the other has always been in contention week in, week out on the PGA Tour champions for the last 4 or 5 years. Jerry didn't win last year. Steve won six times. And, you know, they're both kind of searching. If I were to start with Jerry, it really looked like, you know, the course, the new venue really benefited him. It was it's a beautiful golf course, and beautiful is understating it. You know, when we first went to the Hogue Classic at Newport Country Club with the Senior Tour, I know that, you know, the players there knew about the course, and, you know, along the Pacific Ocean, breathtaking, you know, is a word that goes hand in hand with, you know, any California city on the coastline. But it was breathtaking there, Gary, out at in Tucson yesterday at La Paloma. It's a Westin resort with 27 holes. They managed to find, or they chose, I guess, what they felt to be the 18th strongest where they could route it. And it was a heck of a hike for fans. I mean, I walked the entire front nine between Steve and Jerry from 1 through 9, and then out 10 with Mario Tiziani. And when I turned around to go back, I already had 8,000 steps. And, wow. You know, I bet you, you know, it's on a good day at Phoenix Country Club, you know, which is all back and forth holes, you know, old time country club. You're lucky to get maybe 10 to 12, you know, for 18. And so that was interesting. But Jerry made the comment that, you know, the course is kind of set up for him a little bit because a lot of guys, i.e. Steve Stricker, told me afterwards he didn't hit a lot of drivers this week because if you can't control the driver, the desert was no place to play from. And unlike the desert that we have at my course here, where it's just all little pebbly stone, easily removable, you know, you can, without moving the golf ball, you can get kind of a place to hit the ball behind it. They were actual bona fide rocks down there in the desert, and you had to be lucky to be in between them. And, you know, that was what kind of led to Stuart Sink's demise, because not only were there rocks down there, a lot of, what we call, you know, native bushes, desert scape type of plants that, you know, that don't take a lot of water and grow in the desert, and they cause a lot of trouble. So Steve wasn't hitting many drivers, but Jerry Kelly, of course, not being as long and really being, you know, one of the most accurate drivers on the PGA Tour champions, did, and it really worked out well for him, and he kind of chuckled about that at the end of the week. So it and then the green complexes were just amazing. I mean, a lot of back-to-front slopes, a lot of, you know, places they could place the pins, a lot different than the Omni Tucson National, which was more your conventional resort, almost retirees type course, very flat and very playable. And although Omni Tucson National, I guess, statistically played a touch harder, I was surprised statistically that La Paloma did not even statistically measure, you know, up as much harder than Omni Tucson National, but anecdotally, it took a toll on some of the top golfers in the field in terms of those at the top of the leaderboard.
Did Jerry, do you think he was a little longer than he's been? Because he told me that American Airlines broke his driver. He blamed the airlines, of course, when he was coming back from Hawaii earlier in the year, and he switched from a ping driver that he's been hitting the last couple of years to a Callaway, I think it smoked. I think that's the name of the driver. And he said, told me he was smoking it. So do you think he was a little longer, or was it hard to tell?
It was hard to tell. I did see in going back over my photos that, you know, that was a Callaway that was coming in and out of his bag. And then, you know, at the end of his swings, I don't know if he was any longer, but he was very accurate. And again, put himself in position to make birdies. And, you know, the course wasn't yielded a lot early in the day, but for him, it really came on, you know, after about the ninth hole. I think he birdied that one and then went on to make, I believe it was four birdies on the back nine to make a push, because when Stuart Sink fell back, then all of a sudden everybody was back in the ball game. And we should mention Joe Durant, actually, who was playing in the final group with Stuart Sink, wound up winning by two over Jerry Kelly and Stephen Elker and, I believe, Kevin Sutherland. And but, you know, Jerry had a chance just because, you know, Sink did not pull away like it appeared he might early on when he birdied three of the first five and had a pretty, I think it was a five-shot lead at one point. So, he looked comfortable with the driver. And, you know, he said he didn't have his A game altogether, but, you know, we've seen that at the AmFam with Steve Stricker. When you don't have your A game in a tournament you're hosting, sometimes it's because all the other responsibilities kind of, you know, have an impact on what you're able to do with the golf club.
Yeah, Jerry would never blame it on, you know, how busy he was last week, if it had affected his game at all. But it appears that it really didn't. I mean, I think he's got a pretty good record in this tournament. I think he had one other runner-up finish maybe three or four years ago, right?
Yep.
And now another runner-up finish or a T2, but really hasn't played, I don't think, his best golf at the Kola Garden. It's probably because there's a certain amount of distractions that he deals with, but he happily deals with them. I mean, he wants to be out front talking about this. So, you know, he was probably mixed emotions for Jerry when he got that close to the lead. I'm sure he was grinding the win, but I think if you told him at the start of the week that he'd finish second, he'd probably have taken it.
Absolutely. And, you know, to go back to what we started talking about with regard to your interview with him on the Zoom ahead of the tournament, you know, you've been around athletes of all sports a lot more than I have. I don't remember a guy being so vested in a company that is his sponsor as Jerry is. And, you know, before the tournament on property, Connor Stang and Julie Nelson, the PGA Tour Champions media reps, just reached out and asked if we wanted to ask any questions of the guys. And I both of them are affiliated with companies that are into this cancer screening. And I asked a question of Jerry, and it turned out the question was not real. Was not a good one in his mind, because I hadn't done my homework in comparing the two companies. We won't name the other one, about cancer screening. And, I think it's fascinating that, we have these sponsors on the PGA Tour Champions that are helping bring awareness to the athletes who are actually playing in the tournament at that age. Cancer screening, with colorectal cancer, now they're asking for screening after the age of 45. Every, 5 to 10 years, depending on what the findings are. And, and Jerry knew that the other company into screening was not FDA approved. And then if you look at the transcript of his interview at the tournament site, and I'm sure in his interview with you, Gary, he was quoting things that most of us never even knew and might only come out of the mouths of doctors. I mean, that's how into this, into Exact Sciences and the Cologuard product, Jerry is in terms of his knowledge. It fascinates me that he is really, really, staunchly behind what Cologuard means to people his age.
Yeah. A lot of golf professionals sign endorsement contracts with various companies and pay lip service to the product or service. But this is a real partnership with Jerry. He's, as you say, he's fully invested in this. And yeah, in my interview with him, you're right. He was talking science terms and sounding like a doctor and talking about gene mutation and stuff like that. I mean, you don't hear that coming out of the mouths of too many PGA Tour professionals.
Right? No, not at all. And the neat thing yesterday, and I wrote about it in the game story today, was on the 15th hole, they had the Patriot Outpost, which they have at every most PGA Tour champion stops, where the military members who get into tournaments free as spectators then also have a place to go and have beverages and sandwiches and the like, and a good place to watch the action from. But they also have the Survivor Central, where they had last year I think there were only maybe a few dozen over at Omni Tucson National, but with the magnitude of this facility over at the golf course, the new one, they were able to spread this out and La Paloma, and they had to have 200 cancer survivors out there. And Jerry knew this, and he had birdied that hole 15 the first 2 days, and yesterday he rolled in probably a 30-35 footer for birdie, and then padded the two ribbons on his hat. One for former University of Wisconsin Badger hockey and baseball player Rob Andringa, and another one for another guy that Jerry played in a pro-am with a few years ago, the year after he played with Robbie Andringa, and that was Mike Mancini, and just really applauded the people who were there, because they this week they really inspired him, and if you listen to Jerry, they probably inspired him through a less than 100% A game in terms of his confidence and what he was doing with the golf club, but it inspired him to battle to the end and produced his best finish since Furyk and Friends last October.
Yeah, Jerry talks often about how the gallery and the crowds get him motivated and inspire him, and sometimes you take that with a grain of salt, but I think this is a what he did on the 15th hole in his tournament, three birdies, 3 days, three birdies. I think that just goes to show that there's more than a grain of truth to that. I think he definitely does get lifted up and pushed by the crowd. And, it shows in the AmFam Championship, certainly, and it shows in the tournament he hosts, and it shows wherever he goes and there's a crowd, chanting his name. It fires him up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it was very much a family affair. His son Cooper was there with a bunch of friends. It was funny, after Jerry birdie 9, he's coming around. By the way, and we'll talk about this in a second. This transition was fascinating too, because we'll be going through this here in a year when we move from University Ridge to TPC Wisconsin. You know, they had to use carts, Gary, because there was so much space in between tees and greens, and there wasn't really a path to go down in front of tee boxes and walk the whole way. So I think all but two of the golfers in the field used a cart, and the caddy or the golfer, you know, drove the cart. And you know, and so when he birdied nine, then he's, you know, driving past Cooper and his friends, and he's, you know, high-fiving them, you know. So he had a lot of, you know, people on his side. Also, wife Carol was there. And then Allie Trasimar, the former Allie Hain out of Madison, is staying with Jerry and Carol down here in the Phoenix area. You know, her husband, John, former mini tour golfer, who inspired a victory of Eric Van Rooyen, died last November at the age of 33 with stage 4 melanoma. So, again, cancer cuts real deep to Jerry Kelly. And if he's able to help, he will. And it was neat to see him kind of, you know, rally behind the cause, as it were. And I thought year one was great. You know, I can't wait to see how TPC Wisconsin develops into the new home of the AmFam Championship in 2025. It was odd. You know, change is always hard. And you're going from, you know, turning off at this exit or that exit to get to the golf course. And then, you know, where is parking? Where is the where is scoring? Where is the locker room? Where is the media center? Our media center couldn't have been further away from the action. We walked past about, 200 hotel rooms or resort rooms, the swimming pool with a water park, and past a banquet room and then down and around. And I guess that's going to change next year. But, you know, the logistics, it's just it's going to be a challenge. And we take for granted, Gary, don't we? You know, these guys just show up. The fans show up when there's a change in venue. I go back to when they moved from Butler National to Cog Hill. And that seemed to be seamless. Or from Tuckaway Country Club to Brown Deer Park, felt like it was there forever. I mean, but there's a lot of work that goes into that.
There is. And that GMO move, of course, they went to a huge park with almost unlimited space for parking. And it's going to be interesting, you're right, to see how they pull it off at TPC Wisconsin. You've been there a whole lot more than I have, Rob. But as I recall, there's basically just a two-lane road to get into the course, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit north side of Madison, a little bit sort of not remote, but kind of away from the city a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of galleries they get there. I would suspect it'll be very similar to U Ridge, but the ingress and egress getting in and out of the golf course might be a challenge.
Yeah, because you know, you're right. There is only and now they've added houses. Our friend Mike Keller lives right by the parking lot there at TPC Wisconsin, and in a cul-de-sac or a little lane of about maybe a dozen houses. So, I mean, they're going to still have to come and go. It will be interesting. And you know, I think about it and I just kind of go, huh, well, that's somebody else's problem. But you and I will show up to cover the tournament, you know. But, you know, it's all about how do you get, you know, shuttles in there? Where will they drop them off? There really aren't many, you know, like you said, you know, in terms of roads leading in, there's one. And, unless they're building another one behind the, you know, the new practice area, I can't imagine, you know, where they can funnel, you know, that in. They're going to have to put in something, you know, a mammoth drop-off area. I think I've heard that parking may be over at Madison College and or Easttown, possibly, you know, the areas near the airport. But, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of obvious places like, you know, the cross country course at University Ridge, or you know, Epic with their mammoth parking lot. A lot of things fell into place when the AmFam started there, and it's just gotten better and better every year. So now it kind of was a start from scratch process. So I'm sure we'll talk to Nate Pokrast about that when we get closer to the tournament and see how that's all going, and maybe ask him to list off maybe the three or four most difficult logistical problems with the new venue.
Yeah, the good news is, you know, Nate and his staff have had a couple of years to work on this and to consider everything, and I'm sure they've got a plan, and it's, you know, it's going to work because they put a lot of thought into this. So we'll have to see how it goes in 2025.
You know, they could park him at Steve Stricker's house, but I'm guessing that maybe Steve Steve's already got players staying with him. Isn't that the Scott Verplank room down there? Scott Verplank always stays, so I don't know if that would work very well. But speaking of Steve, though, it was a tough finish yesterday. His iron play was miserable early on. Just couldn't, drove it just a little bit crooked, put himself in some tough spots, but trying to, distance control was a bit of an issue early on, led to a couple bogeys, and you just can't make bogeys on the PGA Tour Champions on Sunday and expect to make a move. And he admitted to me afterwards, Gary, that he thought maybe his mind was elsewhere, and I was hoping that it wasn't something non-golf related, but it was simply looking ahead to the Players' Championship this week. Kind of tells you, I think, how much going back to the PGA Tour for the first time in an individual event since, 2020, I think, at the 3M Open. That's the last time he's played in a non-team event on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I'm hoping that was just a one-off for Steve, just a bad day. He's going to bounce back and have a good week this week at the Players. He's anxious to test his game now that he's a couple years removed from playing on the big tour. He just turned 57 a couple weeks ago, and I'm sure he's a little anxious and a little nervous to see how he plays there. I haven't had time to look up his record there. I don't know if he's got a good record at TPC Sawgrass or not. I know Jerry almost won there the year that Tiger won it, one of the years Tiger won it. But it's going to be a big week for Steve, I think. And hopefully that last round was just kind of a one-off and he can shake that one off.
Yeah, I did actually. I downloaded the Players' media guide from, I guess it was last year. And his record is solid. I think maybe I'll have to go on memory, but four top tens. I don't know if he's ever really flirted seriously with victory there, but he's played it fairly well. He's gonna be tested to put the ball in the fairway, give himself chances hitting those irons from the fairway as opposed to the rough, and distance control with some of those target golf shots, both off the tee and then into the obvious par 3 17th will be tricky. He had Jimmy Johnson, his longtime caddy, in the bag at the Colligard. He said it'll be wife Nikki on the bag this week, and she obviously has a lot of knowledge of TPC Sawgrass. So yeah, it'll be interesting. And just kind of, golf being so scattered in that level above the senior tour now, there's a lot of effort being expended. We're just coming off the Arnold Palmer Invitational where, Scottie Scheffler had a really impressive victory. But, this is the one big tournament, Gary, where live isn't a factor. The other majors, at least most of them, will have a live presence. So it'll be interesting to see where he fits in. Do you have a kind of a suspicion, both in terms of, his mental approach to it, but then also, what he's done physically and fundamentally with his golf game here in dominating the senior tour, where that might translate down there?
Well, I can only go on sort of what Jerry Kelly said about his game. And Jerry told you that Steve's game is a great fit for TPC Sawgrass, and there's no reason he can't not only make the cut and knock Jerry off the pedestal of being the oldest guy to make the cut there, but Jerry seemed to think he could contend. And if Jerry thinks that, no reason for me to think that it can't be true.
Obviously, his putting will set him apart from anyone at any level, but it probably takes more than that this week. Endurance, another thing, 72 holes if he makes the cut versus 54 on the Champions Tour. Been a while. Probably since he's played a 72-hole event outside of the senior majors, and obviously his record in those has been very good. And I'm excited for him. He gets to do this, and then the senior PGA or the PGA Championship in May because he's the reigning senior PGA champion. And you'll be down at Valhalla to see him try that. To me, knowledge of this course and knowledge of Valhalla probably. It's a good year for this to be happening to Steve Stricker.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he might not stop there. He's talked about going back to John Deere, where he won 3 years in a row, I think 9, 10, and 11 maybe, 2009, 10, and 11. He's gone back there since, obviously, and he's talked a little bit about maybe going back there again this year. So, again, he's going to have a very full schedule between some starts on the PGA Tour and defending all his titles and the major championships on the Champions Tour.
And just, you know, looking at his record down there as I scroll through the last year's media guide, will be, I'm sure, have actually, I bet you this year's is up on the site since it's Monday already. But, you know, it's been a while since he's contended. Now, he played in 21, 3 years ago now, shot 70, 77 and missed the cut. But, you know, made five cuts in a row before he stopped playing the tour regularly. But best finish in that last five was a T13 in 2014. His best finish ever in the Players' Championship was a T6 back in 1999. But check out the scores that year, Gary, 73, 73, 70, 74. It tells me it was a test of survival. Maybe that's what it'll take for Steve to be in the hunt.
Yeah, who knows what the weather's going to be like if they get 4 days, you know, with some wind and maybe some rain and some miserable conditions. It's a very difficult golf course, as we all know, and 72 becomes a very, very good score on a tough day there. So, looking forward to it. I'm supposed to be on a Zoom call with him, I think, tomorrow, Tuesday, and we'll see what he has to say about this week.
And then he'll be going right back to the PGA Tour Champions. I was a little bit surprised that he opted to play in the Hogue Classic. Talking to Connor Stang, the PGA Tour Champions media rep, Mario Tiziani is currently the fourth alternate. Kind of the status he'll be for a lot of tournaments as they and get in when guys' physical, you know, health isn't good. But Connor said that last year, I believe, the average PGA Tour Champions event had 6 to 8 Hall of Famers in it. And already this year, 10 have committed to the Hogue Classic. They love the L.A. market. I know Fred Couples is always plays there. It was the last time I saw Tom Watson play on the Senior Tour when we were still living in California. And it's just a good course, good fit, you know, not overly long. And it draws a pretty good field. So he's going back, and he'll have daughter Izzy on the bag, Gary. Izzy 1-0 as a caddy. I don't know if I would have gone back and done that again. Would you?
Yeah, you want to keep your perfect record. And to me, it's amazing how Steve plays so well no matter who's on the bag. You know, the caddy is important. We all know that. And I'm not going to downgrade what the caddy does to help players. But Steve plays well no matter who's on his bag. It's either daughter, his wife, Jimmy, Mario. He's one with a bunch of different people on his bag.
But he's carefully not allowed you or me to fill that role.
That's probably smart of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Izzy, the future Badger has to like what she's seen out of her future team. The Badgers currently ranked number 69 in the country in the Division I NCAA rankings. They've got a 39-40-2 record, and this week playing at the Briars Creek Invitational down in Johns Island, South Carolina. A bit of a tough go of it for the Badgers today, coming off their win off of their third place finish at the Westbrook Invitational here in Arizona. They are currently tied for 16th out of 17 teams with Penn State. Gary, I expected, you know, especially with Chloe Chan winning that Westbrook Invitational and the Badgers playing just so well, making a lot of birdies. They have not made a lot of birdies today, only 4 in the afternoon round with about 6-7 holes to go. And they made a fair number, it looks like about 10 that they counted in the morning round, but they also counted 2 triple bogeys. So not sure what the conditions are like down in South Carolina today, but it's been a bit of a struggle. And even worse, they're, I think, behind all 8 Big Ten competitors. And right now that number 69 ranking is 10th among Big Ten conference teams. And so they've got some work to do if they want to try to position themselves for an at-large, because that's a lot of teams to fight through. The good news is Illinois is 67, Nebraska 68 right in front of them, Michigan at 49, Minnesota at 56, not too far away. But it looks like maybe the top 4 or 5 teams in the Big Ten, unless they really collapse at the Big Ten championship, are in good shape for going on a national. So I don't know. It's college golf for you. It like our games, that part is similar. It comes and it goes.
Yeah, Rob, very rarely do you see, a college team that puts the pedal to the metal every week, every tournament, and, you know, has a bunch of players at or around par or below par, men or women. I mean, it's college golf, right? They're 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. And I remember what it was like when I was that age, Rob. It's hard to be consistent in anything, but where are you finding those scores, Rob? Because I am looking at, I'm on Golfstat. I'm looking for them. Is that where they are?
Yeah, they are. There are a lot of tournaments this week here, and it's Briars Creek Invitational, and it's about I think it's buried somewhere down in there, about fourth line down, third line down. And it was, I guess if you're looking for, you know, bright spots, Gary, Kate Brody had a tough morning round. The freshman shot 79, but has bounced back. She's 2 over through 13 and currently leading the Badgers. Chloe Chan, 75 in the morning, 4 over this afternoon. And Carly Carter, if you take a look, Gary, I don't know if you can pull that up, but her scorecard from this morning, I guess you have to go to player leaderboard to do that. She shot even par 72, and to call it the hard way would be understating the word hard. She had all kinds of colors on that scorecard.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Rob. She had a triple bogey, an eagle, 4 birdies, and 3 bogeys, and the rest pars. That is the definition of an up and down round right there.
She birdied. She started on 4 in the shotgun start and started bogey bogey, then par eagle, but then she finished with 4 birdies in her last 5 holes to get it back to even. She's been a wonderful surprise for Todd Erline's team at the number one spot this year. And she is coming back. In fact, everyone in the starting lineup here this week is coming back, and then they fill in with Izzy Stricker out of Wanakee and Lauren Salmon out of Murrieta, California. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. The other one we're paying very close attention to are the two components of the Johnny O at Sea Island, Georgia, where we have the Marquette Golden Eagles, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, and Bennett Swavely. And Illinois Fighting Illini and Pearson Hunt. Now, Pearson Hunt is off-site. There's an individual competition for all the teams. They can bring as many individuals as they want. So while the team competition is at the Plantation Course at Sea Island in St. Simon Island, Georgia, the individuals are over at a place called Sea Palms Resort, also on the island. And Pearson Hunt, after opening round 74, comes back with a 4-par 67 and currently is fifth among the individuals, and there's about 25 of them. But more importantly, it's basically a glorified qualifying round, in my opinion. He's playing with veteran Jerry G and Ethan Wilson, who I believe is a freshman. And Ethan is 2 behind Pearson Hunt. Jerry G started out really strong this afternoon, then fell back. He shot 70 this morning, 74 this afternoon. They're all in the top 10. But in my opinion, if you look, if you jump back to the team leaderboard, Gary, over at Plantation Course, it's not stellar stuff. Right now, the Illinois, which shot 282 this morning, has fallen 6 spots into sole possession at 8th, and very unlike the Illini. So, we've really followed the ups and downs of Pearson Hunt here this season, and it looks as though he may be able to, at least with one more good round tomorrow, commandeer a spot back in the lineup. It really doesn't matter till you get to Big Tens, but at the same time, you'd like to get to a point where everything kind of is smooth sailing. It hasn't been that for Pearson.
No, it hasn't. It's been up and down for him the last couple of years, actually. And I know he talked about making a couple swing changes maybe a year and a half ago. Takes a while for those to take hold. But one thing I'm looking at, Rob, on this leaderboard is Notre Dame 19 under today. They're in first place. Their number one player is 7 under, and their number two player is 6 under. So there's some guys are playing good golf in this tournament, that's for sure.
Well, you get a lot of those red numbers on there, and that's the key. And as we look at the team leaderboard, Marquette playing in the tournament. And early this morning, we thought it might be the Golden Eagles' day. Their number one golfer, Max Lyons, starting out, I don't know if he started. I can't tell where he started in the morning, but on number 10, 327-yard par 4, he made a hole-in-one on a par 4 on the Plantation course and went out in 31, it looks like, or at least played the back nine in 31. And but unfortunately, he shot 39 in the back for a 2-under par 70. And that's kind of been the, the theme for our men's teams, consistency and just trying to get everybody to play at kind of an even keel. Max started on a hole 5, so that 10th hole was kind of early in his round this morning. But, the Golden Eagles currently last out of 14 teams. They shot 291 this morning, and they're currently 5 over this afternoon. They are playing, though, without Boom Sima Ari. I'm told he has a wrist injury, and so he continues to rest. They've got Max Lyons, Josh Robinson, Aiden Lafferty, Mason Schmidtke, and Patrick Adler in the lineup, and currently only Aiden Lafferty at T30 and Max Lyons at T22 are inside the top 30.
Yeah, I'm looking at all the individual scorecards now. A little too much green and not enough red on those scorecards. And whenever Boom Sima Ari is healthy and gets back in the lineup, it's definitely going to give this this team a boost because he's been, one of their top two best players, I think, over the last year and a half. And gold medalist in the Big East last year, I believe. And, they need him in the lineup for sure.
Now, it's apples and oranges, the Sea Palms Resort and the Plantation course where the individual is. But Marquette's Will Hemauer, former Milwaukee Marquette golfer, 74 this morning, 72 this afternoon, much like Pearson Hunt, really trying to impress Coach Steve Bailey at Marquette, at least, and play his way into the lineup. He's had several real good showings, and I was telling you before we started this thing, the podcast today, Gary, that I wouldn't be surprised to see Will Hemauer get a shot, especially if Boom Sima Ari isn't able to come back in the next week or two, ahead of the Big East tournament, just in case they need to figure out, who the best 5 are. Because right now, I think you can make the argument that Will Hemauer has proven coming out this spring that he has really elevated his game since last fall. Oh, we've lost Gary here. Could be a phone problem. We'll figure that out and get back to the Talking.Golf podcast here in a second.
I'm not sure what happened.
And we've reestablished connection with Gary D'Amato. That's the first time that's happened in all of our Talking.Golfs. Does that mean I'm going too long?
No, I don't. I'm upstairs, and sometimes I really should do this downstairs, Rob, because I'm far away from my router, and every once in a while the Wi-Fi goes out, and I think that's what happens. So sorry about that.
Well, we were talking about the ups and downs of the Marquette golf team. We have the ups and downs of our own. It is early yet, so Marquette with a good chance. I mean, if nothing else, they're developing some pretty solid depth. And just to mention too, Bennett Swavely, really a strong showing today for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. It was a 2-under par 70 in his morning round, and he's currently even par this afternoon. He had an early birdie. He started on hole 7, birdied number 9, bogeyed 18. It's been all pars around those two holes, and he currently finds himself at T17. I really kind of think, Bennett Swavely is kind of one of those, unsung, guys that has a bright future in this game. He's a contemporary of both Cameron Huss and Pearson Hunt. I think he's still maybe a year behind them, if not two, in terms of college eligibility. So, he's become a pretty strong player for the Gophers, and I'm not sure where he's playing in the lineup, but it looks like let's see here.
Number three.
So he's moved himself up there. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what he does in the summer, see if he can make some noise in the state AM and the state match play and whatever else he enters. I don't know if he plays in the Ray Fisher. I can't recall him playing the Fisher. Maybe he does, but I don't know Bennett very well. And he's from Hudson, right?
He is from Hudson, yep. And, you know, again, a guy that just kind of, you know, quietly, and this is to your point, Gary, we know Bennett is a really, really good golfer. And, but with all the talent that we seem to be developing around at the college ranks, he sometimes gets overlooked. A fourth place finish at the Wisconsin State Amateur last year at Erin Hills, a T11 at the State Open at Century World, a T9 at the State Match Play at Lake Arrowhead, and a T19 at the Ray Fisher with a second round 65. So he can go low. He kind of made his mark in the state when he won the state junior championship back in 2019 at Edelweiss Chalet in New Glarus. And then, you know, just has been kind of an upward trajectory getting the offer from the Gophers. And obviously college golf has helped. The competition at Minnesota has helped. And it will be interesting to see where he goes.
I never would have guessed, Rob, that he put together that kind of record last year. I mean, I know he's a fine player, but I had no idea that he, you know, was basically in the hunt in a couple of those summer tournaments and had some very high finishes. You know, you concentrate on the leaders and the guys out front, and you're watching with the final group, and sometimes the guy who finishes fourth or fifth or sixth has had an incredible tournament, and you don't get to spend much time with them. So I'm looking for that to change. I'm thinking I'm going to get to know Bennett a little better this summer.
Yeah, I think he's poised for some good stuff, and especially if Cameron Huston, Pearson Hunt turned professional, he'll kind of carry the mantle as maybe one of the more veteran guys, you know, with a chance to win one of those, if not, you know, whether it's the Ray Fisher or the State Am. But, of course, you know, when you have, you know, guys like Jack Schultz, you know, playing well into their 30s, you know, and even the senior amateurs in the state, you know, that can, you know, perform well at from time to time, it's tough. We should also mention when it comes to college golf, so the Badger women are number 69 in the country. The UW Green Bay women open the spring at 228. There's 276 teams playing Division I college golf. GB's record, though, not too bad, 15-20-0. So if they get a few good finishes under their belt and can perform well at the Horizon League Championships, you know, they could make a good run at defending their title there. The Badger men are number 93, according to the Division I rankings. The Marquette men, 94. UWGB, 278. That Badger-Marquette proximity, Gary, is very, very interesting. And after the Badgers win, last month, they could, with some momentum here, you know, make a push. I would think Marquette's looking to win the Big East, get the automatic berth. You know, that seems to be, you know, their route to the NCAAs. But, you know, there's a lot to look forward to here as we hit the teeth of the college golf season.
Yeah, it's hard to – I don't know if I put much stock into what Marquette's doing in this tournament. There's some awfully good programs in this tournament that are ahead of them. But, you know, they're still one of the best teams in the Big East. They have been for years and years, and they will be again this year. But they're going to have to play a little better than they're playing now to defend their title in the Big East.
I mentioned UW Lacrosse came down here by me to Westbrook Village. The Badgers played their Westbrook Invitational at the Vistas course. UW Lacrosse played in the George Fox Invitational at the Lakes course up at Westbrook Village. And that's just north of the State Farm Stadium in Peoria. Really good golf course. Lacrosse, their first taste of top-notch competition. A lot of teams in that tournament, Gary, were, you know, what we would call the blue bloods of Division III women's golf. George Fox ranked second in the country. Emory University ranked fifth. Claremont Mud Scripps sixth. Redlands, University of Redlands from California, seventh. So they finished, I believe, was 11th out of 12, maybe, was where Lacrosse finished. So a good showing. Dave Cable brought all of his kids down, was able to get all of them into the tournament, either as individuals, as part of the team. Lacrosse currently ranked 46th in Division III. UW-Whitewater, with the automatic berth from the WIAC, is the top-ranked women's team in Wisconsin at Division III level at 32. I wanted to mention Division III, Gary, because the Eau Claire men are currently ranked 18th, and they are bucking for one of those at-large berths because there's no conference and they're for men's golf in the WIAC, not enough schools. So they have to go for an at-large berth, and they have to compete with a lot of private schools who are not in conferences. and they didn't help themselves at the Golf Week Invitational last fall, finishing 20th out of 25. That was the bad news. The good news is they shot a 285 in the final round to give them momentum going into the spring. Gary, they've got three events on the schedule this spring, and one of them is the Visit Florence Spring Invitational hosted by Emory University, April 14th through 16th. That will be where they're able to hopefully build on their resume, maybe see some of the schools that they'll be competing against for an at-large. And, it's the game within a game of college golf that these college coaches, not only do they have to try to get their golfers individually to play at a high level, but as a team, they've got to get their teams into tournaments where they can perform well, develop confidence, and then meet all the computer criteria that I don't think you or I could spend a day analyzing and then be quizzed on it.
It's got to be tough for a team that's not in a conference to schedule, because scheduling is such an important part of college golf. It's who you play, when you play, where you play. And it's got to be tough for an independent or a team that's not in a conference to get into some of the tournaments that can make or break their season. And especially, the tournaments where they can beat teams, their equals, and climb up in the rankings. So, very interesting, Rob, and you'll be back. You'll be back in Wisconsin to cover the WIAC women, correct?
I may not. So that'll be this fall. I did last fall. I do it when it goes back to back with the WIA, but we're in a calendar. It's a leap year, Gary, I hate these goddamn leap years, because what it does for at least for a year, it takes the WIAC and moves it earlier in October. And then for some reason, the WIAC tournament for girls is almost a week later. So there's a gap there, and I can't close that gap. And there's nothing in between to fill it with. I guess I could cover some stuff, for the high school. So this year I'm going to have to miss it. I'll do it remotely. I'm sure Jim Kelsch will head up there and get some good photos for us up at Reesburg Country Club. But it is a week earlier, so I'm going to miss that one. But you're right. And not going back to your point about Eau Claire and scheduling for the men, not only is it tough to schedule the meaningful tournaments, but it's a public university, Gary. And they're going up against a lot of these, schools in Division III that are private universities: Methodist, Emory, Oglethorpe, Illinois Wesleyan, Carnegie Mellon, Claremont Mud Scripps, which is on the men's side. I don't know. They're one of those schools in that those are three colleges that compete as one athletic entity. And one of them is an all-girls school, or all-women's school. And so you're going up against that. Usually you've got alumni there that have gone on to make millions. So money's not an issue. And Darren Skinner's done a really good job. He's now got, at least one tournament in the fall and one in the spring where they can, move up. And with this new ranking system they've got, 18 is as high as they've been, but I'm not sure it's going to be high enough to compete with some of these teams. I haven't memorized which teams aren't in conferences. I want to say Emory's isn't in one that has enough schools, and I want to say that Carnegie Mellon might be one that is also potentially a bugaboo because they might be in I think they're in that same conference as WashU out of St. Louis, where they compete as like an entity there, but they aren't really, they're all independents, and so because they're basically it's four schools that do that. So, you've got to have a certain number of schools in your conference to get an automatic berth to the NCAAs. There are more for men than women because there's more men's teams than women's teams right now in Division III. It is just complicated. But the almighty dollar, Gary, does control a lot of that.
Well, Rob, I'm glad you stay on top of it because I sure don't. So you have an amazing in-depth knowledge of Division III golf, high school golf, college golf for that matter. So one of us on this podcast is very up to date on this stuff.
And I'm not sure who that is. I'm not sure my knowledge would be nearly as intricate as I've made it if my daughter hadn't played at that level.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out, after years and years of trying to figure out, why the WIA does what it does, and that's a podcast for another day. what goes on at the Division III level, and I'm talking to Dave Table that Division I, Division II, they qualify into regionals, and then you've got to perform well, maybe top three or four at a regional to go to the national championship. Here, you get direct admittance to the national championship, which is good and bad. You've got these powerful conferences like the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, which usually has upwards of three women's teams and maybe, you know, two or three men's teams there, you know, and everybody else has one from their conference. But then you've got, you know, you've got some really, I guess, what to put it nicely, developing programs from smaller conferences where golf might not be a priority. They go down there, they play two rounds, miss the cut, and that's it. And I think there's a push now to maybe get Division III into that regional to nationals process so that, you can get more schools from competitive conferences into the postseason and then get the very best to the national championship. That's missing right now. But again, Gary, that is also controlled by the almighty dollar.
And, Rob, we haven't even touched on NAIA golf or junior college golf, which I'm sure you're also very much on top of.
Well, yes and no. I every time that Southwest Tech and Scott Kennedy gets a good golf team, he tells me they go one way, Madison College and others go a different way, and Southwest Tech, which has the golf, you know, the golf management program, they go up to Minnesota and always run into a Rochester Community College. I'm not sure which one is the power, but they just don't quite have the horsepower to get through. And there's only one spot to get to nationals. So it's they've had some really good teams that don't go. And this is, it's fun to talk about this in the month of March, Gary, because I feel like we're the is it Joe Lunardi or who does the brackets for the NCAA tournament for the basketball? Because it's essentially the same deal. Is your strength of schedule good enough? Is who you play good enough? Is you know, what your record is, you know, your overall record, your KenPom is a big word in the basketball ranks, you know, that
yeah.
Everyone's got a strength of schedule metrics that goes into that. And it's, they've tried to, remember we go back to the start of the year, they tried to do it with this, I can't remember what the name of the scoring process was that was going to help simplify the rankings process, and it didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's clipped, it's CLPPD.com or something, and they've got the rankings, and it seems to be, they are much different than what we had before. Although, like I said, I think because Whitewater, you know, and Stout over the years and lacrosse have been in that, you know, 28 to 35 range, the top team in the conference, which is about where Whitewater is now. But Eau Claire has moved up. So now we've got this different process, and I don't think anybody understands it.
Well, the answer is obvious, Rob. Play your butt off and see where it gets you, you know, right?
Make birdies, right? Make birdies.
Yeah, make birdies. That's right.
Let me see. We've got the Players' Championship this week, as we mentioned. It's kind of neat. There's a pause on the Senior Tour schedule. There's a pause in the Corn Ferry Tour schedule. We haven't quite kicked up a lot of dust on Latin America yet with the PGA Tour America's schedule. Izzy and Bobby Stricker are playing today. Speaking of the Strickers, I'll look that up quick, Gary. But aside from maybe getting out and playing some golf, anything on your agenda for this week?
No, we've got one more beautiful day, I guess, Tuesday, Rob, and then weather turns a little bit and starts to go downhill. So I'm going to try to get out and play nine holes tomorrow. I've got a Zoom call with Steve and something else going tomorrow, but we'll see if I can get out and play nine. You can play nine or 18 anytime you want. You're spoiled.
I'm taking the day off. I had to run, organize a 144 player Senior Softball Association golf outing on Saturday, and then went up to see UW lacrosse. And Gary, it's a softball golf outing when at the registration table they check in, and instead of going right to the range, they stand there and they spend the entire pre-tournament talking to each other. And socializing, and then we go out on the golf course, and you know, we had two little drink stations set up discreetly, kind of off the record spots, and then a couple of guys set up two more in the middle, and let me say there was no shortage of alcohol in that tournament on Saturday, and I was the master of ceremonies at the afterwards, so I kind of kept it under control, but it's a hoot. But you're right, it's we can play, but I'm making Monday my day off, and I'll tee it up again Tuesday. We've got the members starting Thursday, so that'll be the next event. But in real golf, Gary, Bobby Stricker with a opening round 79, Izzy Stricker with an 82 at the Dare the Bear Championship at the Black Bear Golf Course in Eustis, Florida. 5 under par 67 leads the way, but only five golfers out of the 27 that finished the round today broke par. So it looks as though maybe, just maybe, we've got some weather issues down in Florida, at least some wind, and that will make the the Player Championship interesting. And like we said, Steve Stricker's best finish was in apparently bad weather because scores were high that year.
Steve, is he being homeschooled this year because she's, or this semester, because she's playing a lot of golf from Florida and she's going to be on her dad's bag caddying? Is she how's she managing school here?
Well, it's like it was like I butt dialed you when I was talking to Steve yesterday after he said that. I said, doesn't she ever go to school? And she does go to school, and she's a very smart young lady, and you have to be smart these days to get into the University of Wisconsin. And much like they've done ever since COVID, really, she'll be in person, most of the fall, semester, and then when the family spends their winter in Florida, she'll go into the virtual type of education that seems like every other kid that you encounter these days in junior golf is doing. And, it's a different era between that and then just watching the state high school girls basketball in Wisconsin over the weekend. You know, the transfer portal is robust at the college level, but it's certainly well at work at the high school level there, too. And so there's a lot of things that are different now than they used to be, where you pretty much had to, if you missed a class or if you missed a day of school, you know, your eligibility might be in jeopardy. But now, we're trying to make kids succeed, and Izzy certainly has been able to master the juggling act of being a student athlete, and so credit to her, and I'm excited for what's ahead. But Steve confirmed it. They're into that virtual school or online school portion of the academic year.
Well, I'm looking forward to next month at the Masters. Rob Steve is going to be the Golf Writers Association of America. He has been named Player of the Year for 2023 with a great year he had last year. He is coming to our dinner the night before the Masters start, and he's bringing Nikki, Izzy, and Bobby, and they'll be at my table, and I'll get to present Steve, so I'm looking forward to that. I'll have to ask Izzy how she's juggling school and golf.
Yes. I don't know, and tell her that, the two guys asking are ones that probably wouldn't fare very well trying to learn anything from a computer.
For sure. That's for sure. Look, I probably disconnected us in the middle of this Zoom call.
You can use that as an example, but I wasn't trying to get you back. And wait till if you get that far into it in the playback, Gary, you'll chuckle. I talked for about a minute before I realized you were gone. It was, that should come as no surprise though, right?
That's right. Well, we patched it together and made it work. So thanks for that.
We did. And we'll make it work again next week. Gary, I think we've come to the end of our allotted time and then some. You have a great week trying to get out in the golf course. I'll do the same, and we'll talk golf again next week.
Okay, Rob. Thanks.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf, presented by Wisconsin.Golf and the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Marquette with a good chance. I mean, they're, if nothing else, they're developing some pretty solid depth. And just to mention, too, Bennett Swavely, really a strong showing today for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. It was a 2 under par 70 in his morning round, and he's currently even par this afternoon. He had an early birdie. He started on hole 7, birdied number 9, bogeyed 18. It's been all pars around those two holes, and he currently finds himself at T17. I really kind of think, Ben Swavely is kind of one of those, unsung, guys that has a bright future in this game. He's a contemporary of both Cameron Huss and Pearson Hunt. I think he's still maybe a year behind them, if not two, in terms of college eligibility. So, he's become a pretty strong player for the Gophers, and I'm not sure where he's playing in the lineup, but it looks like Let's see here.
Number three.
Okay. So he's moved himself up there. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what he does in the summer. See if he can make some noise in the state AM and the state match play and whatever else he enters. I don't know if he plays in the Ray Fisher. I can't recall him playing the Fisher. Maybe he does, but yeah, I don't know Bennett very well, and he's from Hudson, right?
He is from Hudson. Yep, and you know, again, a guy that just kind of you know, quietly. And this is to your point, Gary. We know Bennett is a really, really good golfer, and but with all the talent that we seem to be developing around at the college ranks, he sometimes gets overlooked. A fourth place finish at the Wisconsin State Amateur last year at Erin Hills, a T11 at the State Open at Century World, a T9 at the State Match Play at Lake Arrowhead, and a T19 at the Ray Fisher with a second round 65. So he can go low. He kind of made his mark in the state when he won the state junior championship back in 2019 at Edelweiss Chalet in New Glarus, and then, you know, just has been kind of on an upward trajectory, getting the offer from the Gophers, and obviously college golf has helped. The competition at Minnesota has helped, and it will be interesting to see where he goes.
I never would have guessed, Rob, that he put together that kind of record last year. I mean, I know he's a fine player, but I had no idea that he, you know, was basically in the hunt in a couple of those summer tournaments and had some very high finishes. You know, you concentrate on the leaders and the guys out front, and you're walking with the final group, and sometimes the guy who finishes fourth or fifth or sixth has had an incredible tournament, and you don't get to spend much time with him. So I'm looking for that to change. I'm thinking I'm going to get to know Bennett a little better this summer.
Yeah, I think he's poised for some good stuff, and especially if Cameron Huston, Pearson Hunt turn professional, he'll kind of carry the mantle as maybe one of the more veteran guys, you know, with a chance to win one of those, if not, you know, whether it's the Ray Fisher or the State AM. But, of course, you know, when you have, you know, guys like Jack Schultz, you know, playing well into their 30s, you know, and even the senior amateurs in the state, you know, that can, you know, perform well at from time to time, it's tough. We should also mention when it comes to college golf, so the Badger women are number 69 in the country. The UW-Green Bay women open the spring at 228. There's 276 teams playing Division I college golf. GB's record, though, not too bad, 15-20-0. So if they get a few good finishes under their belt and can perform well at the Horizon League Championships, you know, they could, you know, make a good run at defending their title there. The Badger men are number 93, according to the Division I rankings. The Marquette men, 94. UWGB, 278. That Badger-Marquette proximity, Gary, is very, very interesting. And after the Badgers win, you know, last month, they could, you know, with, you know, some momentum here, you know, make a push. I would think Marquette's looking to win the Big East, get the automatic berth. You know, that seems to be, you know, their route to the NCAAs, but, you know, there's a lot to look forward to here as we hit the teeth of the college golf season.
Yeah, it's hard to, I don't know if I put much stock into what Marquette's doing in this tournament. There's some awfully good programs, in this tournament that are ahead of them, but, you know, they're still one of the best teams in the Big East. They have been for years and years, and they will be again this year. But they're going to have to play a little better than they're playing now to defend their title in the Big East.
And I mentioned UW Lacrosse came down here by me to Westbrook Village. The Badgers played their Westbrook Invitational at the Vistas course. UW Lacrosse played in the George Fox Invitational at the Lakes course up at Westbrook Village. And that's just north of the State Farm Stadium in Peoria. Really good golf course. Lacrosse, their first taste of top-notch competition. A lot of teams in that tournament, Gary, were, you know, what we would call the blue bloods of Division III women's golf. George Fox ranked second in the country. Emory University ranked fifth. Claremont Mud Scripps sixth. Redlands, University of Redlands from California, seventh. So they finished, I believe, was 11th out of 12, maybe, was where Lacrosse finished. So a good showing. Dave Table brought all of his kids down. Was able to get all of them into the tournament, either as individuals, as part of the team. Lacrosse currently ranked 46th in Division III. UW-Whitewater with the automatic berth from the WIAC is the top-ranked women's team in Wisconsin at Division III level at 32. I wanted to mention Division III, Gary, because the Eau Claire men are currently ranked 18th, and they are bucking for one of those at-large berths because there's no conference and they're for men's golf in the WIAC, not enough schools. So they have to go for an at-large berth, and they have to compete with a lot of private schools who are not in conferences. And they didn't help themselves at the Golf Week Invitational last fall, finishing 20th out of 25. That was the bad news. The good news is they shot a 285 in the final round to give them momentum going into the spring. Gary, they've got three events on the schedule this spring, and one of them is the Visit Florence Spring Invitational hosted by Emory University, April 14th through 16th. That will be where they're able to hopefully build on their resume, maybe see some of the schools that they'll be competing against for an at-large. And, it's the game within a game of college golf that these college coaches, not only do they have to try to get their golfers individually to play at a high level, but as a team, they've got to get their teams into tournaments where they can perform well, develop confidence, and then meet all the computer criteria that I don't think you or I could spend a day analyzing and then be quizzed on it.
It's got to be tough for a team that's not in a conference to schedule, because scheduling is such an important part of college golf. It's who you play, when you play, where you play. And it's got to be tough for an independent or a team that's not in a conference to get into some of the tournaments that can make or break their season. And especially, the tournaments where they can beat teams, their equals, and climb up in the rankings. So, very interesting, Rob, and you'll be back. You'll be back in Wisconsin to cover the WIAC women, correct?
I may not. So that'll be this fall. I did last fall. I do it when it goes back to back with the WIA, but we're in a calendar. It's a leap year, Gary, I think these goddamn leap years, because what it does for a year, it takes the WIAC and moves it earlier in October. And then for some reason, the WIAC tournament for girls is almost a week later. So there's a gap there, and I can't close that gap. And there's nothing in between to fill it with. I guess I could cover some stuff, for the high school. So this year I'm going to have to miss it. I'll do it remotely. I'm sure Jim Kelsch will head up there and get some good photos for us up at Reesburg Country Club. But it is a week earlier, and so I'm going to miss that one. But you're right. And not going back to your point about Eau Claire and scheduling for the men, not only is it tough to schedule the meaningful tournaments, but it's a public university, Gary. And they're going up against a lot of these, schools in Division III that are private universities: Methodist, Emory, Oglethorpe, Illinois Wesleyan, Carnegie Mellon, Claremont Mud Scripps, which is on the men's side. I don't know. They're one of those schools in that those are three colleges that compete as one athletic entity. And one of them is an all-girls school, or all-women's school. And so you're going up against that. Usually you've got alumni there that have gone on to make millions. So money's not an issue. And Darren Skinner's done a really good job. He's now got, at least one tournament in the fall and one in the spring where they can, move up. And with this new ranking system they've got, 18 is as high as they've been, but I'm not sure it's going to be high enough to compete with some of these teams. I haven't memorized which teams aren't in conferences. I want to say Emory's isn't in one that has enough schools, and I want to say that Carnegie Mellon might be one that is also potentially a bugaboo because they might be in a – I think they're in that same conference as Wash U out of St. Louis, where they compete as like an entity there, but they aren't really – they're all independents. And so because they're basically – it's four schools that do that. So, you've got to have a certain number of schools in your conference to get an automatic berth to the NCAAs. There are more for men than women because there's more men's teams than women's teams right now in Division III. It is just complicated. But the almighty dollar, Gary, does control a lot of that.
Well, Rob, I'm glad you stay on top of it because I sure don't. So you have an amazing in-depth knowledge of Division III golf, high school golf, college golf for that matter. So one of us on this podcast is very up to date on this stuff.
And I'm not sure
who that is.
I'm not sure my knowledge would be nearly as intricate as I've made it if my daughter hadn't played at that level.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out, you know, after years and years of trying to figure out, you know, why the WIA does what it does, and that's a podcast for another day. You know, what goes on at the Division III level. And I'm talking to Dave Table that, you know, Division I, Division II, they qualify into regionals, and then you've got to perform well, maybe top three or four at a regional to go to the national championship. Here is, you know, you get direct admittance to the national championship, which is good and bad. You've got these powerful conferences like the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, which usually has upwards of three women's teams and maybe, you know, two or three men's teams there, you know, and everybody else has one from their conference. But then you've got, you know, you've got some really, I guess what to put it nicely, developing programs from smaller conferences where golf might not be a priority. They go down there, they play two rounds, miss the cut, and that's it. And I think there's a push now to maybe get Division III into that regional to nationals process so that, A, you can get more schools from competitive conferences into the postseason, and then get the very best to the national championship. That's missing right now. But again, Gary, that is also controlled by the almighty dollar.
And Rob, we haven't even touched on NAIA golf or junior college golf, which I'm sure you're also very much on top of.
Well, yes and no. I every time that Southwest Tech and Scott Kennedy gets a good golf team, he tells me they go one way, Madison College and others go a different way, and Southwest Tech, which has the golf, you know, the golf management program, they go up to Minnesota and always run into a Rochester Community College. I'm not sure which one is the power, but and they just don't quite have the horsepower to get through. And there's only one spot to get to nationals, so it's they've had some really good teams that don't go, and this is, it's fun to talk about this in the month of March, Gary, because I feel like we're the is it Joe Lunardi or who does the brackets for the NCAA tournament for the basketball? Because it's essentially the same deal. Is your strength of schedule good enough? Is who you play good enough? Is you know what your record is? You know your overall record. Your KenPom is a big word in the basketball ranks. You know that everyone's got a strength of schedule metrics that goes into that, and it's. They've tried to. Remember, we go back to the start of the year. They tried to do it with this. I can't remember what the name of the scoring process was that was going to help simplify the rankings process, and it didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's clipped. It's CLPPD.com or something, and they've got the rankings, and it seems to be they are much different than what we had before. Although, like I said, I think. Because Whitewater, you know, and Stout over the years and lacrosse have been in that, you know, 28 to 35 range, the top team in the conference, which is about where Whitewater is now. But Eau Claire has moved up. So now we've got this different process, and I don't think anybody understands it.
Well, the answer is obvious, Rob. Play your butt off and see where it gets you, you know, right?
Make birdies, right? Make birdies.
Yeah, make birdies. That's right.
Let me see. We've got the Players Championship this week, as we mentioned. It's kind of neat. There's a pause on the Senior Tour schedule. There's a pause in the Corn Ferry Tour schedule. We haven't quite kicked up a lot of dust on Latin America yet with the PGA Tour America schedule. Izzy and Bobby Stricker are playing today. Speaking of the Strickers, I'll look that up quick, Gary. But aside from maybe getting out and playing some golf, anything on your agenda for this week?
No, we've got one more beautiful day, I guess, Tuesday, Rob, and then weather turns a little bit and starts to go downhill. So I'm going to try to get out and play nine holes tomorrow. I've got a Zoom call with Steve and something else going tomorrow, but we'll see if I can get out and play nine. You can play nine or 18 anytime you want. You're spoiled.
I'm taking the day off. I had to run, organize a 144 player Senior Softball Association golf outing on Saturday. And then went up to see UW lacrosse. And Gary, you know it's a softball golf outing when at the registration table they check in and instead of going right to the range, they stand there and they spend the entire pre-tournament talking to each other and socializing. And then we go out in the golf course and You know, we had two little drink stations set up discreetly, kind of off the record spots. And then a couple of guys set up two more in the middle. And let me say there was no shortage of alcohol in that tournament on Saturday. And but I was the master of ceremonies at the afterwards, so I kind of kept it under control. And but it was it's a hoot. But you're right, we can play. But I'm making Monday my day off, and I'll tee it up again Tuesday. We've got the members starting Thursday, so that'll be the next event. But in real golf, Gary, Bobby Stricker with a opening round 79, Izzy Stricker with an 82 at the Dare the Bear Championship at the Black Bear Golf Course in Eustis, Florida. 500 par 67 leads the way, but only five golfers out of the 27 that finished the round today broke par. So it looks as though maybe, just maybe, we've got some weather issues down in Florida, at least some wind, and that will make the the Players Championship interesting. And like we said, Steve Stricker's best finish was in apparently bad weather because scores were high that year.
Steve, is he being homeschooled this year because she's, or this semester, because she's playing a lot of golf from Florida and she's going to be on her dad's bag caddying? Is she how's she managing school here?
Well, it's like it was like I butt dialed you when I was talking to Steve yesterday after he said that. I said, doesn't she ever go to school? And she does go to school, and she's a very smart young lady, and you have to be smart these days to get into the University of Wisconsin. And much like they've done ever since COVID, really, she'll be in person, most of the fall, semester, and then when the family spends their winter in Florida, she'll go into the virtual type of education that seems like every other kid that you encounter these days in junior golf is doing. And, it's a different era between that and then just watching the state high school girls basketball in Wisconsin over the weekend. You know, the transfer portal is robust at the college level, but it's certainly well at work at the high school level there, too. And so there's a lot of things that are different now than they used to be, where you pretty much had to, if you missed a class or if you missed a day of school, you know, your eligibility might be in jeopardy. But now, a lot of we're trying to make kids succeed, and Izzy certainly has been able to master the juggling act of being a student athlete, and so credit to her, and I'm excited for what's ahead. But Steve confirmed it. They're into that virtual school or online school portion of the academic year.
Well, I'm looking forward to next month at the Masters. Rob, Steve is going to be the Golf Writers Association of America. He has been named Player of the Year for 2023 with a great year he had last year. He is coming to our dinner the night before the Masters start, and he's bringing Nikki, Izzy, and Bobby, and they'll be at my table, and I'll get to present Steve. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll have to ask Izzy how she's juggling school and golf.
Yes, I don't know, and tell her that the two guys asking are ones that probably wouldn't fare very well trying to learn anything from a computer.
For sure. That's for sure. Look, I probably disconnected us in the middle of this Zoom call.
You can use that as an example, but I wasn't trying to get you back. And wait till if you get that far into it in the playback, Gary, you'll chuckle. I talked for about a minute before I realized you were gone. It was, that should come as no surprise though, right?
That's right. Well, we patched it together and made it work. So thanks
for
that.
We did. And we'll make it work again next week. Gary, I think we've come to the end of our allotted time and then some. You have a great week trying to get out in the golf course. I'll do the same, and we'll talk golf again next week.
Okay, Rob. Thanks.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf, presented by Wisconsin.Golf and the Wisconsin State Golf Association.